I always did like a man in a uniform. And that one fits you grand. Why don't you come up sometime and see me? I'm home every evening.
Yeah, but I'm busy every evening.
Busy? So what are you trying to do, insult me?
No, not at all. I'm just busy, that's all. You see, we're holding meetings in Jacobson's Hall every evening. Anytime you have a moment to spare, I'll be glad to have you drop in. You're more than welcome.
I heard you. But you ain't kidding me any. You know, I met your kind before. Why don't you come up sometime, huh?
Well, I...
Don't be afraid. I won't tell.
But,
Come up. I'll tell your fortune. Ah, you can be had.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to True Stories of Tinseltown. And I am here with the lovely Leah from the wonderful blog, Cary Grant Won't Eat You. And I'm so glad to talk to you. I always have so much fun when we do this. Hi, Leah.
Hi, so do I. I'm so excited to talk with you again, Grace.
I know, we just do. We get off and we're like, boy, this was so much fun. And it is.
True.
And it's so, how you been?
Been doing fine. How about you?
I'm just doing swell. That's all I can say. I don't want to say anymore. I am swell today. So that's a good thing.
That's what counts.
Want to tell everybody what we're going to be talking about?
So we wanted to talk about the life stories and what we're interested in, about the life stories of Mae West and Cary Grant.
Yes, and how they why we were going to do that more so was the fact how Mae West created that character, Mae West, and she lived it until her death. And Cary Grant was a Cockney kid. He didn't have any money, and he literally made himself into Cary Grant and lived that life too. Mm-hmm. So they had a lot in common, and they also had two movies in common. But shall we start a little bit about Mae, where she was from, and all that stuff?
Sure. So she's from Brooklyn, which doesn't seem surprising at all.
Not with that voice. And her accent, yeah.
And she started on the stage so young. I like that Baby Mae, she's called when she's younger.
Yes, her mother wanted her to be a star. She had two siblings, but Mama pushed her.
Yes, and I love, I'm just reading in her autobiography, these hilarious stories about she wanted the spotlight focused on her. And so even in her early performances, she refused to go on stage in the beginning because the spotlight wasn't on yet.
She's something else. She's a trip. She really is.
Yes, and, you know, she just became this huge vaudeville star, and, you know, when she didn't get the part she wanted, she segues into writing. So she gets to write her own. And she just had such an interesting life altogether. But it's just what's amazing about her is just how intent she was on her career so young. And you just don't see that very often where somebody from the very beginning is just, this is what I'm going to do, and manages to totally accomplish it.
Well, if you see it with people who are so young now, like that young, it's generally the parent pushing them for that.
True.
And Mae was like, no, baby, it's me. And she was fascinating. She got married at 17. Mm-hmm. And we were just discussing if she had a second marriage, and we don't think she did.
No, it doesn't. Well, and she lied about so much about her past, it's kind of hard to tell. But the marriage is so strange, too, because – you know, it's kind of the description is, oh, well, she, you know, she was afraid she was going to get in trouble and get pregnant or something. So this woman in one of her shows says you need to get married to protect yourself. So she does it, but then she keeps it from her family. She keeps it from everyone else. And it doesn't even get revealed until, you know, till she becomes a movie star and some, you know, staff member in one of her films finds the marriage certificate. And it's just so bizarre. I mean, the whole thing, it's not really even clear why she got married.
And did she get divorced? You know, I don't even know if they got divorced.
She did. Finally. Yeah. I just read they got divorced and it was something like 1920 or something. So they did get the divorce, but she had this hilarious comment about the marriage that it was as hard to get. It was a knot that was really hard to untie. And she said something like, the judge must have been a sailor to make a knot that tight or something.
She's too much. Watching so much of her stuff, her lines, she made up her own lines, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. We see May, and she sees Lillian Russell, who has kind of a risque act, and May says, mm-hmm. I'm going to go even further than that. I'm going to become, Mae West, risque, mm-hmm. funny body, and she owned it, and she did it. And she became very good and got really good. She started Diamond Lil. Isn't that one of her big ones?
Yeah, that's the big production. I mean, because she has sex first, of course.
I love that.
Whenever you write your first play, you're going to make it the most controversial.
I love her. And she used a funny name, a different name.
Oh, that's right. I forget the exact name. The Albatross or something is the name of the original play. I think it's the Albatross, which is even funnier. And then they just make the decision to change it. And, it's so funny because they said the first showing was only like 85 people because, people were afraid to go.
Yeah, and there'd be men in trench coats. Something
and
like
the
that.
The second show is just completely packed. And the manager, she asks the manager to account for it because he'd been such a naysayer. And he said, I forgot about the sailors.
Oh, man.
Which is just, so sex becomes this huge hit. But of course, she gets thrown in jail for that for a little while.
But she had fun. After, did you read what happened in jail? The warden and his wife took her out every night. She said it was one of the best times she ever had.
And she has to wear her own underwear because the underwear is unacceptable there.
So I would imagine.
She wears her own silk underwear.
Of course. What else?
Yeah.
She couldn't be wearing cotton.
But she also was really interesting about her sympathy for the inmates, and she ended up trying to help some of them afterward, and that was quite interesting, too.
I think a lot of people go to jail who are like Mae West was huge. But if someone's in there that you don't expect to be in there, and then they talk to the inmates, they do develop a sense of empathy for them because a lot of them are in there because they're poor, because of what?
Yes.
And I can see Mae just listening to their stories and it being hard for her. So sex. And that was big.
It's hard to even conceive of that. I mean, you think of Madonna coming up with that book all those years later called Sex and all of the flack she got.
Well, she was naked and, it was like everything. It was different. It was like S&M and this and that.
It was different. But I think you realize just how over the top she was so, so young.
She was yes, but she wasn't actually that young at that point.
No, by the time that came out, you're right. She'd already been on vaudeville for a long time.
Yeah, she was there forever. And somehow Paramount was interested in her to become one of their stable of stars. And maybe in one of the, she wanted to be the highest paid star at Paramount.
Right.
And she did. And the guy I watched, he said that she actually saved Paramount because they were going to go bankrupt. And when Mae came on the scene at 40 kids, she started at 40,
right.
Which is amazing too, that she was something else. I have this. I'm going to try this. I'm trying to be like really slick today for us. I have this thing. And this is Mae made her film debut in Night After Night. And she was incredible in this. I can't tell you. Did you ever see it?
It's so wonderful.
Okay. So
the film is so dull until she shows up.
Exactly. So this is Mae's debut on film. And that was amazing. She did that Night After Night. And allegedly, because I read this book on George Raft, that Mae had known George and that they had like a little fling at one time.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought they were just friends. That's interesting.
They became pals, really good friends. Mm-hmm. But this was, George Raft's biographer, Stone Wallace, who was fabulous. He came on the show and he said that they did. So, but it wasn't a big thing. It was just like a little flingy poo-poo. And she walks onto that thing, and it's boring. And then Mae comes in, and it's like kaboom.
It's really the most amazing. little clip of a film I've ever seen, because the film is just so dull. And then I, you know, the funny thing about that film too is so many of the films, all the really funny lines are obviously between her and a man. And in that particular movie, she and the school teacher.
Oh, I love those two together. They're hysterical. They are so funny.
You got this prim school teacher, and she's just trying to get her to relax and gets her drunk. And I mean, it's just so fun to see her with another woman having a really fun scene like that.
It was great. Because they had this Dullsville chick that George was after trying to impress. Dullsville. Why, you know, why, how could he go from her to, you know, May from her? But those two end up getting so drunk, they end up falling asleep together in the same bed.
Yeah.
Which was so cute. And they're both like, but May's still perking around. And she's got that, you know, good heart. And the teacher, she says, quit your job. And because she, you know, she slept through it. And it's so funny. She thinks that May is offering her job to come to be one of her girls.
Yes.
As a prostitute. And she's like, I think I'm a little too old. But she wanted her to be part of the Institute de Butte that she was going to, that class who joined New York that she was going to have. And they became really good friends. And she said she was going to get, May's like generous, you're going to get profits, this, that. That was, and May just ruled that show. And George Raft said, May stole everything but the camera. And she was fabulous. She just did.
She was.
Once she
came, she wrote her own lines, which was so smart because the rest of the writing in that film is atrocious.
It really is. It really, really is. And that's funny that you mentioned that about her having that kind of a scene with another woman. I wasn't even thinking about that, but you're right, because she really, you know, didn't want any other woman really in any film. May.
Yeah, exactly. It's all she's there, and then the sort of the rest of the men. It's kind of a rare thing.
Well, I read she would only let women who were on her films have dark hair. They couldn't be blonde. They had to dull their teeth because May had these dazzling whites, and they had to darken their skin a little bit because she wanted to be like the dazzling angel. And she, you know, she learned how to hit the lights, and she knew how to make herself look best. She could feel the heat and knew how to make herself look good. So in comes May's second film.
Yes, she done him. Oh, no, I'm No Angels first, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, which, of course, then we get the pairing with Cary Grant.
She discovered him.
You have to describe how she...
She is going into her limousine. She catches a glimpse of this tall, handsome fellow and says, who's, you know, she asks the guy, who's he? And he said, we're going to let him go. He's a bit player. And May said, I don't know how much, she said, can he... Didn't she call him over?
Something like, can he walk or something?
Yeah,
or
he's hired.
Well, so, it's so funny, too, because I know later he seemed kind of miffed that she said she started his career. But you look at what he did before that film, and it was nothing.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. And actually, in that film, he was like nothing at all either. You know, he was like a cardboard figure, you know. She could have put anyone there.
But
yes,
that court scene, he's fun in that court
scene. True, he really
is. He just is sort of laughing to himself and so entertained by her. And you start to see a little of his personality there. So I feel like that, up to then, he could be any guy and, you know, wouldn't matter.
Right.
But there, I thought he's starting to kind of, you know,
Cary Grant. Becoming Cary Grant.
He's becoming him.
And then the second film was when he was the, what was that?
Yeah, why can't I think of that? Yeah, he's just sort of that, he's sort of pretending like he's working for the Salvation Army.
Oh, doesn't he really work for the Salvation Army?
And then you find out later he's undercover or something.
Oh.
Right? He's trying to find the criminal, whatever. It's sort of silly. I mean, I know it's based on the Diamond Lil play, which I've never read. You know, he's so funny because he's straight-laced and she's just, you know, you can be had kind of.
She's a riot.
Oh, and it's great because it takes so long for her to enter in that film. There's a long kind of lull before she arrives, but there's all those things like they're showing the picture of her on the wall and all this big prep before she arrives.
Well, I guess I bet that worked for her because she's like, it's all dull. And here comes May, you know, and she's the full force of life there that she just comes right through and she radiates the presence of Mae West. She dominates.
Yes.
She is the dominator. That's who she is. And she and Carrie did that one. And then they parted ways. They didn't do another film again.
They didn't seem to be best buddies.
No.
But and that's also when all the ships started to hit. So she wasn't able to do as much after that as she was before the production code. But I mean, even with the ones, the later films where, you know, you can see that she's kind of being hemmed in a little bit, she's still funny.
She's hysterical.
And there's still a lot of fun. And I mean, My Little Chickadee is still hilarious.
I love that movie. And she had a thing. I can see the scene where she and W.C. Fields are on the train and they're talking to each other and there's a joke. And I can see her laughing. It's May laughing for real. She's supposed to be laughing, but she's laughing for real. And because you can tell in acting, it's hard to pretend you're laughing. You know, it's hard. It's not easy to laugh. And then when you see them doing something else, you know, when they're really laughing, you go, oh, wow, that is so hard to do. And May was cracking up. But she had this thing in her. She really didn't like to play any banana to anyone, even a man, but she did it. And it was one of her best films. And
I think it is too. And it sounds like she pretty much wrote her part and he pretty much wrote his. So they stayed kind of separate. I know they weren't exactly best friends because, I mean, you know, he was a big drinker and that wasn't her thing. And so there were some problems. Yeah. So they had some problems, but it came out well. And you get both of their forms of humor and they mesh together well because you're kind of on one vein, like when she's the school teacher, which is just a perfect Mae West. And then all of a sudden, you know, we get his humor where he's just kind of, I just really love them both together. And it's a really fun one.
Incredibly fun. And I love the scenes where she's taking on the Indians and she's shooting behind her back, doing this, you know, putting her arms, you know, underneath her arms. She just becomes that. And isn't that the one with the mask bandit?
Yes, the ridiculous mask bandit scenes. And I just love the whole, like, it's such a strange movie in a lot of ways. I love when the bandit first holds her up and she's too busy doing her manicure. To be bothered.
She is the hootiest of hoots. Oh, I don't know because I love May and I always have, but my cousin used to have me do, and I'm not going to do it because I really stink. And when I've done them for people, they go, ew. They don't want to hear me doing Mae West because I did it better when I was like five. But I love her. And She Done Him Wrong was numero uno. I'm looking here. She Done Him Wrong. I'm No Angel was the other one. Then there was Belle of the 90s, Going to Town, Klondike Annie, I've seen, Go West, Young Man, Every Day's a Holiday, My Little Chickadee, The Heat's On, and that was about it. She was over.
She had those late ones, of course, but... I never saw Sextet. I've actually wanted to see that because I'm curious. I hear such mixed. I hear that it's terrible, but it's also really fun.
Fun. I loved it. And it's like, but, you know, I read and I also asked a biographer, Mae West biographer, and I said, did she really believe that these men, these muscle men, because they all had to look adoringly at her? Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, she was like 84 and she still thought that these guys were hot for her.
And she was with one of them all those years, right?
Paul, yes.
All those years.
40 years younger than her.
She wasn't wrong.
Well, with one, the other guys were like,
at least with one.
He said the other guys were looking at her as an old battle axe. So, yeah. And then prior to Sextet, she did Myra Breckinridge.
Oh, that's right. I haven't seen that one either, actually.
That's kind of a freaky flick, big time.
And well, I think I keep sort of parsing hers out because I love them so much. And I, you know, I remember when I sort of watch all of somebody's movies, then I have this great sense of loss. So I love her so much that I've just been, okay, I'm going to wait a little while and then I'm going to watch the next one. So I haven't seen that one either. But yes, I've heard that's also very, very odd. What's it like?
Creepy. Rex Reed's in it. Raquel Welch is in it. And Rex Reed wants to become a woman. And he's got these gorgeous, bright blue eyes. And, of course, he becomes Raquel Welch with these big, beautiful brown eyes. That just goes. And May is this big agent. And she comes in and she's being escorted by Macho Man and the whole thing. And then she does a number and there are men behind her. And Raquel Welch once said she met Mae West and, you know, she had to call her Miss West because that's what everybody called her. And she said that Mae had like man hands. She thought that Mae was a man. That's from Raquel. So Raquel asked one of the guys, what do you think of Raquel Welch? And they said, oh, do you think she's good looking? And he said, oh, yeah, she's very good looking, but nowhere as good looking as you. This is one of the 20-year-old hunks. And she was really happy with that answer. Bingo. That's it. So, you know, she is funny. And it's very creepy movie, but it's a good movie to watch. But, you know, I never want to see it again because it kind of creeped me out a lot. John Huston creeped me out. It was just like, you got to watch it, though.
Isn't that one of the really late ones was that includes that line about the gun in the pocket? Is it that one or is it Sextet? Because that's got to be one of her best lines,
oh,
right?
Oh, I know. Is that a gun in your pocket or are you happy to see me? Right. That's such a great one. I love May. So basically, after her film career, she only did, you know, she did like maybe 7 films. I see she was on Mr. Ed. I never knew that.
Yes. Yes. And I have not seen that episode yet. And I would definitely like to see that. But she, you know, in the meantime, she's amassing this little real estate empire.
Yes. Her building too. She started with that.
Yes. Yes. She was such a good businesswoman. And I love this idea that she kept this apartment with all the, you know, the mirror on the ceiling and it's all white and over the top with pictures
round
of
bed.
Her.
All pictures of her. Oh my God.
And yet it seems so hilariously staged that you wonder, was it really like that when it wasn't strangers coming in? I don't know, but it's just so hilarious.
But that's how it was.
Yeah.
That is what it was. she did it and she had the round bed. She said about having the mirrors on the ceiling, I want to see how I'm doing.
Oh, that's right. That's such a good line.
Yeah. And it's so funny. She was not a smoker or a drinker. Mm-mm. And I'm trying to find that guy's name. He was with her forever.
Novak. Yeah. Well, and he's
Paul Novak.
The sweetest thing. She kept bringing up her will to him because she wanted him to get some of her money, obviously, when she died. And he refused to even talk about it because he couldn't handle talking about her death. So, you know, you think of so many, you know, young people with the older woman and you just assume, okay, there might be a money sort of impulse here. And clearly with him, it wasn't.
Yeah. He adored her and she adored him.
And he refused and he wasn't in the will and just went to her sister. And I just thought that was the sweetest thing. He just, yeah, I can't bear to talk about it. So no.
Yeah. But May that was her thing. That was her life. And she, ended up doing stage plays. She ended up, you know, having her chorus boys because God, she would have no chorus women in there, of course.
Yes, it's like the Chippendales.
Yes, and they're prancing around and carrying May like she's Cleopatra. And May sings a little and she dances. Well, she's so short She was barely 5 feet. And if you notice, all of her dresses cover were way down to the bottom. You never saw her shoes. And so her walk was because she was on like 6-inch platform shoes.
Yes.
And plus she was probably trying not to trip over her dress. So she had that walk, but I think that was part may and part necessity so she didn't fall down.
Well, and that's so funny, too, because I noticed some of the men in those documentaries said that they thought it was because of the shoes. But I read this biographer's description of it, and she called her walk, it's Jane Watts, I think. She described her walk a strolling shimmy. And when she said that, I thought, maybe that's what she was doing. I mean, it kind of looks like the shimmy in motion. And so it's hard to say. Was it just sort of this deliberate?
The walk was a hoot. Whatever it was,
so funny.
There was nobody who had a walk like, or ever will, even impersonators.
No.
Nobody could ever do Mae West.
She was so perfect.
She was perfect. So she did all that stuff. She did the stage play. I don't know about men in her life. We were discussing earlier because I read on IMDb that she was married a second time, which I had never heard of. And you didn't think that that was true.
Well, there's no evidence of it, and it's hard to say. You know, he definitely, I just actually read the part where she was with him in her autobiography, and clearly they were infatuated with each other, but she had a real problem with him because he was so jealous that he was causing problems for her. You know, he was creating incidents, and her mom actually separated them. So she's just, this man's bad for you, and he's violent, and you know, I don't know that there was ever any, it doesn't seem like there was ever any violence against her, but just sort of these huge scenes. And it just sounds like it wasn't, career wise, it wasn't going to work, right?
Well, also,
she wants to be a sex symbol. And here's this guy who can't handle any other men.
Yeah, it's like so ridiculous. Why are you with her?
Exactly.
And I don't get these guys. Like when Joe DiMaggio married Marilyn Monroe, he expected her to become this housewife who would learn to make meatballs and spaghetti. And I think that the icing on the cake was he was in New York and she literally filmed that scene from the 7-year itch over the subway thing, and her dress went up and Joe just had a fit and that was the end of that. But it's like, what do you think, pal? You know, really, these guys, they kill me. Also, I read that Mae's dad was not a nice man. He was cruel. And he kept everybody, you know, under his thumb. And Mae, she was a feminist. Mae did not let men tell her what to do. She had script approval. She had everything. And, you know, in my eyes, this is just me looking at her in this generation as a person who loves Mae. I don't see her, like, for real, like, ever having sex. She just doesn't, you know? She's so campy about it. She's so over the top. That's why she gets away with it. And to me, it's like, I can't believe this, but I guess she did.
Well, and it sounds like quite a few lovers, I mean, at least from her descriptions, but that seems to be borne out. I think she just, this sort of refusal to take anything seriously. And I think, actually, that makes it more likely she had more sex because, right, she's just like, hey, this is fun, and I don't need to take it all so seriously.
Well,
you know, she's just having fling after fling and enjoying herself.
And looking at herself in the mirror
while
she's having sex.
Why not? So I think she just was ahead of her time in so many ways. She just didn't, you know, feel the need to, she says she didn't want to live an apron kind of life. It just wasn't her thing. And so I think, I thought it was really interesting. I found a lot of the male commentators in her documentaries really offensive, actually, because they sort of suggest, oh, the only reason she got away with those lines is because she wasn't pretty enough. And just all this extreme.
You know who was the worst? And I love him. He was my what do you call it? Comfort man. Robert Osborne.
Yes. He was so insulting about her.
Like she's short and dumpy and not attractive.
She's matronly. So it just had to be, that was what, and it's really funny. I remember reading a New York Times interview of, you know, this guy had gone to her apartment and he kept talking about Paul Novak, and just refused to even admit the possibility that they were together. And just, she's kind of gross with this bodyguard she's with. And it's just, I feel like so much of some of the male commentators' comments about her, it's like if they found her sexy, then they're nice about what they see. And if they didn't find her sexy, they make these horrible comments. And it's, I don't know, it's just upsetting. Osborne upset me. There were several like that. Where
I was surprised that he was really, I know he's on the set of Myra Breckinridge, and he said, yeah, just, or Sextet. I don't know which one, maybe both. And he said, you see this 85-year-old woman, and that's true. Come on, she was 85. And she's like getting and has to sit down. But then again, she's 85. And guess, she starred her first movie with George Raft. And George Raft appeared in it as a favor for her. And that was his last movie and May's last movie. George Raft, her friend.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, it's just, yeah, you wouldn't hear that about Hugh Hefner. You wouldn't hear the same level of...
True, that he was 90 and decrepit. And
You don't hear it like that.
No, and I agree.
But I read one of these articles where about her friendship with Edith Head. No, I think it was one of her biographies, and it said her clothes were so tight that they made two versions of them, like the tight version that she'd actually film, and then the loose version for when she was sitting down. Because
poor man,
she literally couldn't. So when you say that, that makes me wonder. You know, did she just kind of used to having to take breaks because she's standing up so much? I mean. Maybe the same thing was happening.
Well, they have this chair when they're wearing really tight dresses. They have this resting chair for women when they're in tight gowns and they're taking a break. So they're leaning back and resting, not actually standing up, but they can't sit down either, but they're resting.
Wow.
Yeah. Jean Harlow. I see, you know, because I post a lot of pictures on my Facebook site, and I found loads of women, loads of actresses on the resting chair.
Oh, my goodness. That's so funny.
Yeah. I guess May didn't do the resting chair. She had to be her own chick. Wow. She was lifelong friends with African-American boxer William Jones. Ooh, this was awful. When management at her Ravenswood apartment building barred him from entering, she solved the problem by purchasing the building and lifting the ban. Go, May.
Wow.
Yes, Ravenswood. She owned a lot of stuff.
And, yeah.
You know, she had her thing. And, you know, I may be sounding like a man, but I'm not looking at it as a man. I'm looking at her as a woman. And I just never got, I got that she didn't. But then her biographer told me she did. And she also said that she did with Paul because he adored her. Yeah. And he waited on her hand and foot. And basically, she had to be a recluse. She became a recluse because, if she, you know, she lived this Mae West. She was always Mae West. And as Robert Osborne said in that, he said he didn't think that girl existed that was before Mae West. And that I agreed with. I don't believe, I think she became that character so thoroughly that that other part of her was long gone.
Well, you do wonder because her earlier life, she talks so much about, you know, there are all these people who had their shows and they would perform the same show for 30 years. And she said she didn't believe in that. She wanted to adjust all the time. So she was always changing her image and her delivery and everything to kind of get, you know, different reactions from different audiences. So she would really, she was more like a stand-up comedian of her time.
She really
right?
was,
she's,
yeah.
Yeah, she's just always adjusting her act. And so it is strange to me, like, she just decided, I'm going to stay with this image, and I'm not going to let it go. And you wonder if that's, that's why I kept wondering if that was part of it, where she'd established her brand, she'd spent all these years perfecting that brand, and she's just kind of like, I just don't want to, create anything else. You know, I kind of wonder if it's just, I don't know that I buy that in her personal life she necessarily was always, you know, playing this kind of role, but it just seems like maybe she just got sick of adjusting and changing and she just decided, hey, I'm going to go on Sextet and I'm just going to be the same person.
But she really truly believed that they all loved her. She felt
it. She really believed it. Yeah.
It wasn't really like a joke. And it's sort of, because I've also seen, I love these interviews. I get them on YouTube with Dick Cavett, and they have like Betty Davis and Joan Crawford on there. And they'll have these young men because they're doing TV shows. And we were just proper. We were friends. He has a lovely fiance. Both of them were like, you know, still thinking that they're the hot mamas of hot mamasville. Yeah. And I think that's just, I loved it, actually. I thought it was really cute. And go, girls, you hot mama still. Yeah. You know, you might as well still think you're a hot mama rather than not mama. You know?
What's up? Right, it's true. It's such a happy way to live, isn't it?
Yes, deluded. I want to be deluded. That's so funny. So basically, May was a recluse in her later years. She was a very, I don't know, she believed in spiritualism a lot. She had this friend.
That's right.
She was devastated when her mom died. Yeah. And she was into all that stuff, like spiritualist. What was his name? Kenny somebody. And he used to go to her house, and she'd go to his house. And he would do, you know, they would do contact the spirit world, and she would contact her mother. And it was just her thing. She loved it. And I think it brought her a lot of comfort. And, you know, at the age when she was there, she couldn't do things anymore. She was pretty much, she did sex tech at 85. And two years later, what happened to May? You know, she died, but she had a series, I think, of mini strokes, didn't she?
Yeah, and I think she had diabetes for a really long time too, and was suffering from that. So yeah, and even in her earlier life, you know, one of the other biographies I was reading was saying, you know, she sort of presented herself like she was this big partier. And yet we know she didn't drink, and we also know that she spent a lot of time at home perfecting her lines, right? That she was actually working really hard. So I kind of wonder, too, if she wasn't really – she was kind of a homebody to begin with in a way. And just in her later life when she wasn't feeling as well and she didn't feel like going to this big production just to go outside, you know, she's just like, hey, maybe I'll just stick around at home. And I don't know. She did so much. She filled so much time doing all of these things. I imagine she was pretty tired.
I bet. She was 87. So let's just say she died of, but she had tons of strokes. She had a series of mini strokes, and she died from complications of strokes and old age. And he was devastated, Paul, her guy. And she was gone, May. Nobody like her, and nobody will be like her. And she just made herself Mae West. How many people could be Mae West? How many people are now ever could be as famous or, you know, cool as May with those lines and everything? She just was.
And just and write your own way, you know, from the beginning, you know, from the salary to, you know, she didn't like the lines, so she wrote her own. She didn't like a play, so she wrote one. I mean, she just really forged her own path. And it's hard to imagine somebody now. I mean, she's in her 40s and she's starring as the romantic interest.
Yes, the sex goddess that all men fall in love with.
Right. And you barely see any of that now. It's just amazing.
Oh, God, no. After 40? No, no.
Yeah.
No. That's like, it's more work because of cable and Netflix and, you know, like Amazon and things like that. Women over 40 are getting more work because of that, finally. But,
TV.
And really good TV. So, but May coming in at 40, that's unheard of. And her, oh, my God, shut up, will you? I tried to do a clip and I failed spectacularly. I cut it out. Don't worry. You don't have to hear my failure. Leah was so kind.
Oh no. It's hard to do.
It is. It's just some people have these great editors. My editor does it just to make sure and does the sound for me. And we'll put the intro and outro, but you know. Other than that, nope. So May died, and she will live on and on and on and on as this icon, a feminist, a woman who – oh, the story from Anthony. I just want to tell the story that Anthony Quinn said. Did you remember that one? He was 18 years old. He went into May's office, and it was all white or something, or I don't know if it was an office or a home. And May was looking him up and down, you know, because she was looking for muscle men. So she said, I got to feel your muscle. So she felt his left muscle. Then she felt his right muscle. And then she said, I'm going to have to get personal. I'm going to have to feel your legs. So she felt his legs and the other leg. And then, you know, she said, how old are you? She said, 18. She said, I'll get in touch with you when you're 21. And so that was a story. But May's like, come into my lair, little boy. Like, you know, like the producers did to women all the time, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So May felt her guys up, too.
Oh, my God.
That's so funny. Anyway, I loved May, R.I.P. And shall we come on to our Carrie, who we both love, and who is your blog guy?
Yes.
So why don't you start?
Well, his life is even weirder. I mean, and I think it's really funny. I mean, basically, he's born without any money. He's, you know, in this sort of situation where the dad is a complete player, is cheating on his wife all the time. And then his mom disappears, and his dad tells him that she's died. And we find out later, well, actually, I sent her to an asylum and didn't tell you. So I can't remember how many years it was.
It was a lot of years before
he found out. He doesn't even know she's alive. And I just saw this documentary the other day that suggested that she wasn't actually insane, because apparently part of one of the theories was that she, you know, she'd lost this child, his sibling, and she just went crazy from the loss. So that was one theory. But another suggestion was this sort of the dad wanted to live with this other woman. And so he sort of institutionalized her and said, she's insane, to get rid of her. So I heard that possibility too. And it's just so sad.
And to tell your son, and he doesn't know this.
Yeah.
I believe his mother suffered from depression,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think she was insane. And it's amazing that someone can just commit you to one, whatever. And she was in there for years. Carrie found out eventually and got her out. But, you know, she was, I'm sure they gave her shock treatment. And she had been in there for so long that it was pretty awful, pretty horrific. Anyway, go on about his childhood for us.
Well, and it didn't sound like even when she was around, at least from, you know, the common descriptions, that she was that nurturing. So a lot of the sort of descriptions of him are about him dealing with this mother loss, and that's why he did this or that. And I don't know, he goes off basically in this kind of acrobatic troupe, becomes his kind of surrogate family.
And he was only, how old? He was like 14 years old when he did that.
He
quit
school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And at first I think he ran off to join them at some point, and then his dad made him go back. But then later on, his dad just let him go. So I've forgotten the timing of that. But it's just I mean, he's just kind of the equivalent of the kid running away to the circus.
Yes,
right?
Literally. And he was a poor kid. He was a little Cockney kid. And Archie Leach was his real name.
Yes, which he mocks so beautifully in His Girl Friday, right?
Yes.
When he I mean, it's just sort of amazing. I can't even, you know, and then he ends up in America because the troupe travels and he goes with the troupe, and then he decides to kind of make it on his own, and he's trying to make a living through these strange jobs. Like, I think he was hawking food at Coney Island some point or something. He's always doing these sort of odd jobs before he, you know, made it in Hollywood. And it's just, really, really interesting sort of beginnings. It's definitely not what you think when you see his sort of depiction of this debonair, you know.
Suave, never ruffled.
Man.
Right.
Yeah.
Never would sweat. No sweat. You know what I mean? He's just perfect. And he created that role himself.
Yes.
He went from Archie Leach. He came in, and there's this wonderful documentary called Becoming Cary Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's really good. And they talk about his childhood. They talk about all that stuff. And they talk about how he actually just became that person. And he, you know, he said he would study people. He'd hang out with wealthy people. He'd study the way they dress, things like that. And then, you know, it's like fake it till you make it. And he made it.
Right.
Because he was great, though. He could do comedy. Oh, yeah. He could do drama. He could do everything. And someone said, and I think this is true, that he never acted like in a movie that he thought he was like Mr. God's gift to women or anything.
No. You know,
like, I'm never. So handsome. Yeah, never.
Well, you kind of wonder if that was part of his objection to May. I mean, he was sort of the opposite. He seems much more self-effacing. And, you know, I think what's so fascinating, too, is when you realize he had this kind of acrobatic past, some of his physical comedy makes so much more sense.
Yes.
I mean, and didn't they say at one point, wasn't he doing the whole thing where you walk around on the stilts?
Yes.
Or some kind of
Icky, yeah. How do you do that? He was very agile, and he came there, and he was just, you know, he got, but I have to say, with May, May was May, and he was going to be overshadowed regardless.
He was going to be, it's true, it didn't matter.
No.
It could have been anyone.
Yes, and maybe that was good for him to learn about people who were, like, dominating, and was going to be, you know, you're just going to, you're window dressing, even, like you said, the court scene was good, and it was.
Yes.
But afterwards, he started doing other movies, and they were all, I'm trying to think, his list of movies that he did. And he just was like Mr. Suave, and he looked it. I mean, he just worked it, and he looked it. He was amazing. And he was Cary Grant. He lived it. He did the whole nine yards. You see all his pictures he did. I'm looking at the ones in the younger. He did nothing. Nothing. Oh, I guess he did Blonde Venus with Marlene Dietrich.
Yeah. But he did that early on.
He had kind of a, like a, you know, eh.
Well, he had some role, wasn't it, with Faye Ray or something in a play early on, too. And it didn't sound like that was terribly successful. But, yeah, he didn't have that much before Mae West.
Yes.
And then, kind of made him. But, yeah, you see him. I like how you see the beginnings of his kind of persona forming in those early movies. And then you see The Awful Truth, and it's just, he's got it.
He's fabulous. Just
it's perfect.
But Topper as well. You get that suave George, that George guy, and he's just wonderful. And he just has it down. He is it, and he never changes. Although one thing about Cary, he stays Cary Grant, but he also, you know, marries – five times, enjoys his life, goes places.
Yes.
And lives a life and doesn't have to, like, well, one thing, he's a guy, so he doesn't always have to wear a white gown or have his hair flipped up or anything like that. He can just look nice. And so he could live more of a life than May, that's for sure. And May would, I think, be horrified if people knew how short she was because, you know, she's larger than life. And she was just such a much more complex character, I think, just as Cary was. And he married different women. He married, of course, there were the rumors about him and Randall Scott.
You know,
and they took those pictures, like domesticity. And believe me, when I was married, if you took, there would be no domestic pictures like that in my house, I'll tell you. Never. It's so funny to see that. Who knows? And you know what? It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. Because
it doesn't matter.
I look at a movie and I never think that about any actor or actress. I go, I love this movie. I love this movie. I love this movie. And in one good part about the documentary of becoming Cary Grant is that he said, it's not important. We're not going to discuss, is he bisexual? Is he this? We're discussing how he becomes this person, not his sexuality. And he did marry a lot. He married Barbara Hutton, poor little rich girl.
Yes.
She was pitiful. I really felt, you know, because she was anorexic. If you see their, did you see their wedding photo?
No.
She looks years older than him. And because all she did was drink Coca-Cola. And she would also take drugs and drink, but she didn't eat. Because her first husband, I think on their wedding night, told her she needed to lose weight. Ouch. Yeah.
On her wedding night?
Yes. She married really horrible men.
Wow.
Cary Grant was the best. They all took millions from her. Cary, signed a prenuptial because he didn't want anything from her.
And I thought that was cool.
Yes. Yeah. Cash and carry, they called him. But Carrie could support himself. He didn't need her money. And so when they divorced and she wanted a party life, she was used to going out nights. And Carrie had to get up early in the morning, do movies. They were just a mismatch all the way.
Yeah.
I like his third, the one he was married the longest to was Betsy Drake.
She was cool.
Fascinating chick.
Yeah. She kind of gets really into psychology and does this whole kind of second life where she's a writer. And I mean, she was just fascinating. And seems like they actually maintained that friendship throughout the rest of her life. And that was, that one was really interesting. And he was really, he made some comment about, because I think didn't she act or something early on? But then he said she just started caring more about other people.
Well, she acted in a lot of movies, and she acted in a couple with Carrie. Like, a girl just wants to be married, which is just horrible.
Oh, that's right. How to marry,
Yes. So she did a couple with Carrie, but what I love most about her is that they were doing a documentary on TCM about Carrie, and she said, bisexual, homosexual, I don't know. I never thought about it. I was too busy effing him. We were too busy effing. I never thought of it. I thought that was hysterical. And I loved her from then on. I said, that girl is something else. And at that point, Carrie was taking LSD.
Right.
100 times, he said. 100 times. How does he still have a brain?
I don't know. He was such a big, and I think she did get him into it because she was really into psychology. And, you know, it's so interesting that he sort of, I don't know, like finds LSD as the way to kind of find out who he is. And it's such an odd
times. Right? In a shrink's office.
Oof. He definitely seems more haunted. I think with May, when you look at sort of her life, she didn't seem to really, I mean, I'm not saying she didn't have any moments of unhappiness, because obviously she did, but she seems like she had a pretty happy life overall.
Yeah.
And he seems much more troubled with what he went through and just the, you know, the marriage is all going wrong. And though he did seem to love fatherhood a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And he then married, who did he marry after Betsy? Is that when he married Diane Cannon?
Yeah.
Somebody's honking their horn. Sorry, you guys. He married Diane Cannon, and she was way younger than him.
Yes.
And he wanted her to dress more conservative because she was like, you know, this is getting to be the groovy phase, you know what I mean? That 60s kind of thing. And he was very controlling. And I always thought of Carrie as this kind of guy. Like, if you had sex with him, he's so perfect, he's so tidy, that if you've missed a spot shaving your legs, that would ruin the moment, and he would be like, ew, and off. But I don't think he was really even that bad. But you know what I mean? He's so perfect. Yeah.
It would be hard to be with somebody that put together.
I couldn't do it, honestly.
Yeah, no.
I would feel too, like he was really, but maybe he was like on LSD and he didn't see anything, but I don't think he did it then. And he wanted Diane to do it, and he was after her and after her and after her to do it, and she did it once, and it was a horrible experience for her, and she never did it again. And she also met his mom, and...
Oh, that's right,
He brought his mom to Hollywood when he found out, but she was, you know, not really enjoying it. And she and Diane, when they went to London, she was in a place, and, you know, she would paint the nails and do things like that with his mother. And Diane got pregnant with his only child, Jennifer, whom he adored, and they divorced soon after. And then, but he always, that was the love of his life, definitely Jennifer. And he got out of movies. He said, what movie was it when he said, I'm not going to do this. She's too young to be chasing after me.
Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah, and she had to go after him, right? She had to.
Yeah, he made her. They changed something about it to make. I think they added more comedy or something so that it felt because he didn't like the idea. And so they changed something about it to make it more palatable, I think, because he didn't like that, which, I like about him, because it does feel like a lot of men just think, well, of course, right? These yes. younger women will still be into me. And he's just like, come on.
Yes. So, and yet younger woman would be into him still, because he was still handsome and gorgeous.
I love this. I heard this little story on TCM where Michael Caine was talking about he was hanging out with him right after his big success. And this woman came up and just starts gushing to Michael Caine. Oh, my gosh, you're so wonderful, whatever. And doesn't realize who Cary Grant is. And she just turns to Cary Grant and says, isn't it just amazing you can just meet these stars on the street? And Cary Grant just goes with it and says, yeah, it is, isn't it?
How exciting.
I just always love that. I just don't think, like, the ego, he just seems to have, you know, be sort of self-deprecating. And I don't know. I love those little stories about him. He didn't seem very arrogant in the way you might expect he could be.
Which a lot of them were.
I'm
not mentioning any names, but there were a lot that were horrible men. But Cary Grant, he seemed fun and nice. He was really good friends with Ingrid Bergman. He stood by her when this horrible thing, when she left the country and left her daughter and moved and got pregnant out of wedlock by Rossellini. And she became, you know, like this evil demon chick. And, you know, eventually she came back and she got another Academy Award. But Cary stood by her. His favorite leading lady was Grace Kelly. And they maintained a friendship up until Grace died. And so many pictures I see of them, you know, that I post, and they're laughing hysterically. You can see how close they are.
Yeah. And,
but I love him. That Touch of Mink, that, you know, that's one of his older movies with Doris Day. I love that movie. Did you ever see that one?
I haven't seen that one. I'm not much of a Doris Day fan. I've sort of reluctantly begun to enjoy some of them. But I have trouble with some of those 50s comedies that are just...
It's a 60s.
Or that was 60s, you're right. But it's so cutesy. It's a little harder for me. I like the 30s and 40s sort of stuff a little better. But I do... Yeah, I can see them working well together. So that doesn't surprise me that they'd be good together.
He hated doing... He thought he was so over the top in Arsenic and Old Lace.
I kind of love.
Yes. And he was fabulous. I mean, he's tied up. He's trying to say things. I thought he was really cute. But I think a lot of critics said the same thing. One movie I want to talk about is None But the Lonely Heart. Did you ever see that one?
I've seen parts of it. I've never seen the whole thing. But it is fascinating to see him playing more of his own childhood than, you know, most of the time he's playing that kind of debonair kind of character. It is hard to get used to the accent, too.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're used to him playing this very different role. I think, wasn't that the only time he was nominated for an Oscar?
Yes. And I think maybe two nominations he never won.
Maybe two.
He said that they're, you know, they had a prejudice against good-looking guys, like they couldn't really act or something like that. But
yeah.
I didn't like that movie. I thought he was not believable. I was so used to seeing him as this debonair Cary Grant. And it's so funny. And then he said later, I was miscast. And he was.
Wow.
Yeah, he was miscast.
I couldn't. That's why I think I just didn't watch much of it. I started watching it and I thought, oh, I love her.
Ethel Barrymore was wonderful.
Yeah. So I thought, oh, you know, I'll just, and I just, I didn't make it through it.
Yeah, I can't. And it's just... And it's so funny, and because it's more like what he would have been had he stayed there. Not like he'd be a thief or something, but he certainly, you know, was not born Cary Grant. He made that. He became that. And nobody could be Cary Grant like Cary Grant. People would say, I want to be Cary Grant. And Cary Grant would say, you want to be Cary Grant. I want to be Cary Grant, too. And his last movie he did, which was a stinker, Walk, Don't Run.
Oh, I couldn't make it through that one either.
Yeah,
I started watching it. I was just like, this is such a snore. I can't even.
Yes, it was horrible. A snooze fest. And he did not play the leading man. He played a businessman who kind of got entangled with these two young loves. I don't remember the guy. And Samantha Egger. And it was just snooze. And that was his last film. That's and he terrible. Said, I'm out of here, 1966. And he enjoyed his life. He traveled. He married one more time to the lovely Barbara Harris, who was very young.
That's right, yeah.
She was gorgeous. And mm-hmm. he seemed very happy with her. They used to, he was a big fan of Vanna White.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's yes. so funny.
They used to, why is that coming up? What's that?
I don't know.
I'm haunted. I'm haunted. Oh, yeah, he in his later years, he and Barbara, this was their routine at night. They would take, you know, those TV trays?
Yeah.
And they'd put them in front of the TV, and they'd both have a turkey sandwich, and they would watch Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. Oh. Isn't that cute to think that he was a fan of Vanna White? I do, too.
Oh, my goodness. I think TV trays got a bad rap.
Yes, I love TV trays. My parents had them. They're wonderful. Yummy, yum.
Very convenient.
But isn't that cute? You could just see him and his wife, cute. And he's trying to guess the vowel. And what is Vanna wearing? So I just love that story. And she was really good to him. And at the end of his life, he was traveling. God, I wish I was older and knew about it. So you know, all these great stars went around and did these like one-man
shows.
Oh,
that's right.
And they would ask questions and things like that. And Carrie was doing it. And one night he was in, I believe it was Iowa, and he was doing.
Yeah, I think so.
He was doing, let me go for sure, because I don't want us to be the I think so kids all the time.
I know. Yeah, I think it was in the Midwest somewhere. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. And he was doing, setting up, getting ready for the night's show. And he would take questions from the audience. And, oh, my God, can you imagine if we had a chance to go to something like that? That would be heaven to me.
And, he's so amazing.
Oh, my God. And I loved him. I thought he was still handsome devil when he was 82 years old. I would have gone out with him like her.
Yeah, right.
You know, really. Who cares? And he, you know, you don't feel old, you get older, but you still feel who you are. You know, your body doesn't feel who you are, but you still feel.
Well, and he's a little less intimidating when he wasn't so, you know, just shockingly handsome, but he just looks, you know.
Cute. I love those glasses he wears. I love a pair of those. He looks so cute in his gray hair, and he really had hair, because so many guys had to wear
That's
tubes.
True, yeah.
And, but he did. He was practicing. And then he said, I have to sit down. I don't feel well. And I don't know if Barbara's there, but they got Barbara. They took him to the hospital, and Carrie ended up dying. He didn't do the performance that night. And that was a very sad day for everybody. And he was wonderful. And he was Cary Grant till the end. I give him credit to making that, to coming from this, from coming from being a tumbler, from his dad being a horrible man, to his poor mother being locked up in an institution and him thinking she's dead, to just becoming the epitome of grace and class and elegance. Yes. He was amazing. So I love him.
And to have so much range, right? I mean, really, you know, he can be the super over-the-top arsenic and an old lace Cary Grant or Monkey Business or something. But then you see him in the kind of sophisticated comedies like The Awful Truth. And then, I mean, his Hitchcock work.
Notorious? I think that's...
Oh, Notorious
is my
favorite.
Yes, his best role.
Oh, I love that.
As far as his dramatic roles. He was amazing. He was complicated. So he did not play. He wasn't a nice guy.
He was not a nice guy.
He was mean to Ingrid. He was not. He was mean to Alicia. And he wasn't a nice guy. And he played a wonderful part. Also, some people call out Suspicion.
And yes, he's good in that too.
Yes, but I prefer Notorious, but he was very good in Suspicion. And he could do such wonderful work. I just am a huge fan. I watch, you know, I tape his movies if I can. And I, you know, he's somebody I can watch over and over and over again.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Some of the stars, when people are interested in their history, it's just their sex life. That's really all they're interested in.
Yeah.
And I think with him and with May, it's the other things in their life that are more interesting in terms of who they became.
Yes, I mean, where they were and how they became.
Yeah, and
who
how they sort of
and maintained
it. Finessed, yeah, just this whole like, how did they go from where they started to finessing this persona and brand that they both just kind of lived out with the rest of their lives? It's interesting that everything else about them is so interesting. And so when people get really into their lives, it totally makes sense to me. But, you know, whereas I get kind of bored with the Marilyn Monroe life sort of analysis because, like, okay, it's just, you know, they're only interested in one thing. And it's just less interesting than this kind of much fuller picture.
Yeah, but she is complex, though, and she is
interesting. True,
and
but I guess people aren't always interested in the things I guess that I find interesting about her, and I guess I just wish it weren't kind of a one note thing.
Yeah, just her being Miss Poo Poo Bee Doo or something.
Yes,
and that's who she had to be.
Yeah,
and it was sad to me. I found her to be a very sad person. So.
Well, and her childhood is incredibly tragic and interesting, and
her mom
you know,
mentally ill. Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were wondering what would happen to her had she lived. And I don't think she could have lived. I think she was, God only knows what could have happened to Marilyn. Would she still be a legend if she lived? No, of course not. You know, yeah. She became, you know, old. I just don't believe she would have been. But I do see Carrie and May as fascinating people. And I admire them both immensely. And they worked it, and they wore
they sure
it.
Did.
I loved them.
Yes, they did.
Okay, so we've gone an hour and 5 minutes, and I think we were sometimes sketchy with things. I'm trying to get things organized. Yeah, but we got the gist of it down.
We did.
It was yes, we did good for. And I do know more, but I just you know.
Yeah.
We did okay. Anyway. Yeah. We wanted to just talk about these two people who created an image, lived the image, and died the image. And they were very different people, but they did a very similar thing.
Yeah, so, that's true.
Thank you, my friend Leah from the blog Cary Grant Won't Eat You. Check her out there. You have the Cary Grant Won't Eat You Facebook page, correct?
Yes.
So you can check her out there. And we'll be hearing, Leah and I will be discussing another topic we will be discussing. Because she'll be back. Because I love you and we have so much fun when we do
these.
Yes,
I love talking with you.
Yes, we have so much fun.
Thank you.
So thanks everybody for listening. And thank you, Leah. We'll talk soon. Bye, everybody.
Yes. Bye.
Frankie and Johnny were lovers, long gone but now they could love. Swore they'd be true to each other, true as the stars above. He was a man, and he was doing her wrong. Frankie went round the corner to get a bucket of beer. Said to the man, call the bartender, have you seen my Johnny here? He's my man, and I loves him so. I ain't gonna tell you no stories, I ain't gonna tell you no lies. Saw your man Johnny leave about an hour ago with that gal named Nellie Bly. He's your man, and he's doing you wrong. Frankie went round and out of hop chain, brought along a great big 44. She went aside, now she spied Johnny on the floor. He was a man, and he was doing her wrong. Oh, turn me over, Frankie, turn me over slow. Turn me over on my right side, Frankie, why did you shoot so low? Was my man, and you done me wrong. Rubber-tired coaches, rubber-tired hacks, is gonna take my man to the graveyard and never gonna bring him back. It was my man, and it done me wrong.